You're listening to the Brian Keane Fitness Podcast, where Irish fitness entrepreneur Brian Keane answers your questions and interviews leaders in the world of fitness, health, mindset, and natural wellness. Come join the fun.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the Brian Keane Fitness Podcast, where we talk everything fitness, nutrition, and mindset to help you with your goals. Today's episode is a Q&A from Instagram, Brian_Keane_fitness on Instagram. So if you're not on there, be sure to check out my Instagram stories that I put up daily and all the other posts that I put up on my wall. Hopefully you've also checked out my new audiobook, The Fitness Mindset. So if you're a podcast listener, there's a very, very good chance that you will enjoy audiobooks also, if you're similar to me. Even though I do read a lot of physical books because I forced myself to get better at physically reading, audiobooks were the amazing introduction for me. I started listening to audiobooks, Rich Dad, Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki. For some of you who listened to the podcast episode on the book, the money book, investment book that changed my life. That was the kind of the catalyst book that allowed me to basically just see the world in a different way. That was the second audiobook I think I ever downloaded. The Power of Habit by Charles Duhigg was the first one. And I got through it in a couple of days because I was like, I can't believe I can get through books this way. So if you're an audio learner, if you enjoy podcasts, there's probably a very, very good chance that you'll enjoy audiobooks as well. So go check out my one, The Fitness Mindset, on audible.co.uk or audible.com or any good audiobook app. Even if you're not checking out my book, I recommend downloading audiobooks if you are a podcast listener, because it's very, very similar to podcasts. You're just listening to the ideas of the author. So if you listen to my podcast, or you listen to Tim Ferriss's podcast, or you listen to insert name here's podcast, if they have a book, as particularly if they've read it themselves, which was something I had to push for my audiobook, it's very, very similar to the podcast, because you're having a conversation with that author, or you're listening in with that author, even though they might be going at a slightly slower speed because they force you to slow down when you're reading audiobooks. But it's very, very similar. So it's my little hack that introduced me to reading more books over the last several years. And I've gone through so many on Audible, because if you're driving every day, if you've got a 2-hour commute, which I intentionally drive 2 hours every day, 1 hour to and from the gym, so I can get my audiobook in or get a podcast in, it allows you to kind of hack that dead time that you would be doing something else. So cooking, prepping your meals, driving, commuting to work, taking the dogs out for a walk, all these are kind of dead time that you can use for learning time, and you can hack it to consume some form of information that moves you forward in a direction of your life that's important to you. So if it's fitness now, listening to fitness podcasts or listening to fitness or nutrition books. If it's business, the same idea applies. If it's relationships, listening to things like The 5 Love Languages or Attached by Stephen Levine. Looking at the areas of your life that need improvement and then filling in that dead time with podcasts and audiobooks can move you forward faster. So that's just a little side note before we get into today's podcast. So go check that out, audible.com, audible.co.uk, and hope you enjoy it. First question today comes in from Disco Davey. There's lots of E's at the end of this one. What does your typical meal day look like now? So my meals, I'll go through it, and for those of you who follow my Instagram, you may already know this, but my next physical challenge that I have set is a 230-kilometer run through the Arctic Circle in February next year. So as of now, my training for the colds, my training for the endurance, the running element, and the psychological training and my nutrition in general are all geared towards that. So as of now, the end of February, again, it's going to be weather dependent because of blizzards, etc., in the Arctic Circle, but I am planning to run self-sufficient 230 kilometers through the Arctic Circle. So it's going to be over 5 days, hopefully, and again, working between -3 and -40 degrees cold. So I'm doing a lot of cold therapy at the minute, which has seemed to give a little bit of a spike in my metabolism. So I've actually increased calories slightly. So that gives you kind of an idea. One of the things that I'll say regularly on the podcast is it's very, very difficult to give somebody a nutritional plan without knowing what their end goal is or what knowing what their training program is, because your nutrition should feed into your training and your training should feed into your nutrition, because they're symbiotic in terms of recovery, in terms of losing body fat, improving performance, building muscle, etc. Insert goal here. And it's very, very important that you know what you're training for. So right now, my nutrition looks like somebody that's training to run through the Arctic Circle. Similar to my training is a lot of high endurance work, a lot of circuits, and then a lot of aerobic work. I have an Ironman later next year as well, so I'm keeping my swimming and cycling just to keep my aerobic fitness high because of the amount of strain and stress I'll be in with the cold conditions in the Arctic. So I want to try and make sure that my lungs and aerobic system are at optimal capacity, because it's a very, very different dragon that I'm trying to slay going to the Arctic Circle compared to running through even the Sahara, because of the risk of hypothermia, the risk of frostbite, all the problems that can come at running in that degree of cold. So my nutrition right now is very, very high fat with moderate protein and moderate carbohydrate. So as of now, what I'm doing in the morning is I'm doing a minimum amount of fasting in the morning, purely because I'm trying to bring down my size slightly, just because running at 85 kilos, and I'm pretty dense. Again, grew up on a farm. I've got farmer dense muscle from growing up on a farm and lifting weights for nearly 13 years now. And I'm trying to reduce that size slightly, just because that bulk doesn't aid the ultra marathons that I run. So I'm trying to bring that down slightly. So I'm doing a little bit of fasting in the morning. So normally for the first 2 to 3 hours when I wake up, I'm not eating. This is probably the first time that I've done that, because it generally, when you're trying to lose body fat, it helps to kind of get a balance of blood sugars first thing in the morning for me. And if you're trying to build muscle, it helps to get those calories in first thing. So generally when that composition or aesthetics was my goal, I would always have breakfast. I never skipped that meal. Right now I'm trying to reduce my size slightly. I'm also trying to get my body used to functioning on a lower amount of food. I just did something very, very similar when I was training to run through the Sahara, where I was training fasted in the morning to try and get my body used to running on empty. And that was strategic, and it actually worked very well, because the last day of running in Sahara, I ran out of food. So I had to do that with limited amount of fuel resources. It's one of the reasons I lost 6 or 7 kilos over those 6 days, and that was down to that last few days where I was depleted of water, or I was dehydrated of water. My sodium levels would have been out of whack because of the heat, and my muscle glycogen would have been completely depleted because of running out of food. So right now I'm fasting for the morning. Then about 3 hours in, I'm having a smoothie or a green shake, which normally varies in ingredients, but the staple and foundation ingredients are rice protein. So I use the Sun Warrior rice protein, 2 scoops. I use colostrum from Cirth Rival, which is a health supplement that can improve immune function, can improve IGF-1, it can improve lots of different issues with gut health, and quite an expensive supplement, so I don't know if I highly recommend it, but I use a small bit of that every morning. I have flaxseed oil in there. I've got a Body Ecology Super Green, so a green supplement. And then depending on what I have that day, I'll add different ingredients. So if I have a lot of cognitively draining tasks, I will add in Bacopa Moneri, which is a natural nootropic, probably my favorite natural nootropic. I will add that in, and then I'll have some organic maca or some organic raw cacao in there as well. And the other ingredients that tend to come in and out very much vary depending on my preference or what I'm doing that day. But they're kind of the staples that are in there all the time. I also use some organic stevia that just sweetens it up, because that smoothie doesn't taste all that nice without the stevia. So I add that in. Stevia is my personal preference for sweeteners, just because it's 1,000 times sweeter than sugar and can balance blood sugars if you've got the natural form. So that's what I use in the morning. Then I normally wait a couple of hours and I train. So right now I'm working out normally minimum effective dose on hypertrophy. I'm still doing a little bit of hypertrophy, so or hypertrophy, to try and keep a little bit of size, even though the volume is a little bit higher. And then I'm doing a lot of circuit work. on top of 10 to 20 kilometer runs at the end of my workouts, or either a swim or a long cycle. So right now, that's how my training looks. After training, I normally have coconut water. So I use the CocoFusion coconut water directly after training. And then I have the Clean Cut Meals, which a lot of you will see from my Instagram stories, are actually the sponsor of the podcast and have been the sponsor for the last 3 months. So I use Clean Cut Meals. That's normally a baby new potatoes, broccoli and chicken. I have that post-workout. Then I wait a couple of hours, and then that's when I get a little bit looser with the nutrition and I kind of play it by feel. Normally the next snack will be 50 to 100 grams of dark chocolate. There might be some almond butter in there, or some almond butter mixed with coconut butter. I normally have the Meridian brand. It's my favorite because they don't have any palm oil or any other ingredients added to it. And then in the evening, I'll have some dinner that I've made myself. So salmon and veg or steak and something along those lines. So primarily fat-based diet at the minute with good moderate to high protein and carbohydrates after training. Again, it can vary on days and I listen to my body if I'm getting super depleted or if I'm feeling run down, where I know my immune system is starting to take a hit from the training or from the environment or from work, I'll up my carbohydrate. Carbohydrates' job is to improve your immune function. So, or their job is to give you energy, which can improve your immune function. There's no essential carbohydrate. There's essential fatty acids from fats, and there's essential amino acids from protein, meaning your body can't make them by itself. It has to consume them from food or supplements. There's no essential carbohydrate. You'll get some vitamins and minerals with it, but effectively, carbohydrates just give you energy. So if I'm feeling my immune system is being run down, I'll increase my carbohydrate intake to try and battle off any sickness that's coming. I'm very fortunate. I don't really get sick anymore because I fixed a lot of the issues with my gut health, my gut microbiome. I fixed a lot of issues with the nutritional foods that I'm eating, and I've learned to back off slightly on training when needs be. I'm using good supplements and I'm getting 8 hours of sleep, 7.5 hours every night religiously. And again, I'm very lucky. I just don't really get sick anymore. And that's down to a combination of all those things. So that right now is how my diet looks. Again, I'm not saying that's how you should have your diet. Yours may look completely different. I don't have any of my clients or anybody coming through my programs at the minute doing a diet the exact same as me, because there's nobody that I'm working with right now that's training to run through the Arctic Circle. So always base your meals and nutrition off what your end goal is. If you're trying to lose body fat, your calories are going to be different. Your meal timings are going to be different. If you're trying to build muscle, exactly the same. Your macros are going to be different. And what you're using as a fuel source and how you're fueling your body is going to be completely different from somebody like me who's trying to run through the Arctic Circle and not die in February. So that's effectively what I'm doing right now. So hopefully that helps. You may get some ideas yourself there. Again, I'm very fat adapted. So also understanding if you're carb or fat adapted will help. Fat adapted means that I work better primarily off fats. I don't need a lot of carbohydrate to fuel my body. And as long as my fats are high, I'm cognitively very clear, my energy is very stable, and my workouts don't tend to suffer. So that works for me. You may, if you're carb adapted, that nutritional strategy would be horrible for you because you'll walk around feeling like a zombie because your carbohydrates are too low. So play around with it. And there's no right or wrong way, but that's what I'm doing right now. Okay, next question comes in from Even X Roshin. CrossFit versus hypertrophy for building lean muscle. Okay, I'm going to make this one short to start and then I'll expand and add a little bit of flesh to it. Hypertrophy wins this one every day of the week. It's very, very hard to argue what's better for building lean muscle, hypertrophy versus CrossFit. And I'll expand on that because some people are like, well, I build a load of muscle building doing CrossFit. I'm like, yes, and I'll explain why that has happened now in a minute. Hypertrophy, by its nature and by its name, is building muscle. That's the parameter. So it's not the training program. This isn't CrossFit versus bodybuilding for building lean muscle, because that's a different question. Hypertrophy is the system and the parameters. So 8 to 10 reps, 30 to 60 or 60 to 90 second rest, 3 to 4 sets. That's the training parameter for tearing fibers down. And then if you repair them with your nutrition and your sleep and your supplements and recovery, you can build lean muscle as a result. So hypertrophy isn't an argument on this question because that's the parameter. What I would imagine this question was meant to be, if I'm going out on a creative limb, was CrossFit versus bodybuilding for building lean muscle. So I'm going to change the question slightly because that one has a little bit more flesh to it in terms of an argument point. Hypertrophy, there is no argument. That's just the system. It's the same as saying, is cardio good for elevating your heart rate? Yes, because cardiovascular training, by its definition, means that you're elevating your heart rate to some degree. So saying, is a treadmill versus a rower better? They're two different questions, as opposed to, is cardio better for fat loss than, you know, hypertrophy? Because they work in completely different ways. So I'm going to change this to CrossFit versus bodybuilding for building lean muscle. And I've already explained hypertrophy or hypertrophy as the system for building lean muscle. When you change the question to CrossFit versus bodybuilding for building lean muscle, the winner is probably still bodybuilding because it primarily uses hypertrophy parameters in order to change your composition. However, that doesn't necessarily always lend itself to building the best quality lean muscle. What can happen with CrossFit is, and one of the reasons that I have a love-hate relationship with CrossFit. I used to do CrossFit when I lived in London, and there's parts of it I love, and there's parts of it that are ridiculous. Those kipping pull-ups are fucking stupid. And there's some really, really good benefits to doing it. What the reason people can respond very, very well to CrossFit and building muscle is you can't really fake CrossFit. And when I say fake it, you can go and do a bodybuilding program and do 3 to 4 sets, 8 to 10 reps, 60 to 90 second reps, 60 to 90 second rest on a couple of compound movements and a couple of isolation movements. And you may not be pushing your body to the limit. You may not be maxing out the weight as heavy as you can with perfect form for those 8 to 10 reps. I spoke about this in the fitness mindset, in the training section, that you, if you're trying to get to 8 reps for hypertrophy or for hypertrophy, you want to make sure that you're lifting a weight for 8 reps that you can't do 9, 10, or 11 reps. If you could, the weight is too light and you need to increase it. If you fail at 6 reps, the weight's too heavy and you need to decrease it. That's where it's easy to kind of fake bodybuilding, because you can go in and be like, all right, okay, yeah, that was 8 reps. I did my 8 reps. And one of the mistakes I made when I started bodybuilding first, when I was 16 or 17, was I saw that you did 3 sets of 8 or 4 sets of 10, but I didn't realize that you had to fail at that weight. So I would pick up a random weight and then I would do 10 reps of it. That's a very, very easy way to effectively not get a response from a bodybuilding program and build lean muscle. You can't fake that in CrossFit because you're working to a time, or you're working to a weight, or you're working in a class and you're really pushing yourself hard physically. So you can build more lean muscle as a result, even though you're not ideally working in the same parameters that would generally build lean muscle. So the question becomes, if you were doing CrossFit perfectly, or if you were doing a bodybuilding program perfectly, which would you build more lean muscle doing? The truth is, you probably build more doing a traditional bodybuilding program if you are maxing out the heaviest weight with the perfect form. You were doing your supersets or drop sets or pyramids that gave you muscle confusion and shocked your body to tear more fibers down, and then you repaired it with your nutrition and your training, or your nutrition and your sleep. So pound for pound, doing both perfectly, you'd probably get a better result building lean muscle doing a bodybuilding program, because that's the goal of the program. It's bodybuilding. You're building your body, working for hypertrophy, and you're working to change the composition of how your body looks. CrossFit, even though it does that, it's the secondary benefit, because in CrossFit, you're generally working for a time. So you're either trying to beat your personal time, or you're trying to beat the person beside you, or you're trying to beat the people in the class. So you're not working for body composition first. You're working for performance first, or working for time first, and the body composition is a secondary result. So building lean muscle, pound for pound, you're probably going to be better basing a bodybuilding program or a hypertrophy-based primary program as your go-to for changing your body composition. However, this is where personality type can also come into play, because if you struggle to push yourself in the gym, and you want to build lean muscle, you may be better to go to CrossFit. If you have any sort of misconception, some females, if you're listening to this podcast, you probably overcome this and you probably don't have this anymore, if I'm taking creative liberty with that, that weights will make you bulky. Because there's still a little bit of a misconception in the mainstream that if females or girls lift weights, they'll get big, jacked and bulky and look like Ronnie Coleman or Arnold Schwarzenegger. And it's just not true. You don't have the natural hormones in your body to do that. You would have to take them exogenously for the majority and the large part to change your composition to look like Arnold Schwarzenegger. So most guys can't do that. So it's very, very unlikely that you'll do it as a female. What weights do for females is they give you a very toned and athletic physique, and they make you look strong, they make you look healthy, and they'll give you shape, provided that you have your nutrition in alignment with that and you're not eating too many calories. So that's where CrossFit can come in quite well. If you have a little bit of a nagging misconception that bodybuilding or weights will make you big and bulky, CrossFit has kind of brought that, and I have to give it its props. Probably, and I've been in the fitness industry for a long time, and right now in 2018, it's probably the most I've ever seen any females in the gym lifting actual weights. And CrossFit have a lot to do with that, because they broke down that barrier about 7 years ago of females lifting weights, and they started to change composition and look amazing. They looked athletic, they looked strong, their glutes were amazing, they had nice shoulders, and girls started to make this switch. Females started to make this switch that, oh, maybe weight training won't make me big and bulky. It'll actually make me look like that girl. She's really lean, athletic, and toned. So CrossFit broke down a lot of those barriers with people, with females in particular. And if you have that nagging thought at the back of your head that weights will make you bulky, then CrossFit's probably going to be better for you, because you're going to be lifting weight without realizing you're lifting as much weight, because you're working for failure, or you're working in a metabolic conditioning workout, or you're working for some time with a combination of a body weight or a box jump. So it really depends on personality type and where you're at with your training right now. Similar to a guy or a girl, if you're not able to push yourself in the gym and you feel like you're going through the motions doing a bodybuilding program and you just can't get amped up, you might be better looking into CrossFit. They have an amazing community of classes and coaches, particularly if you're in a good CrossFit box. You're going to be able to stay motivated down to that kind of tribal community that CrossFit creates. If you're very highly self-motivated and you're purely focused on training as hard as you can yourself, then you're probably not going to need to go to a CrossFit box. So personality also comes into play here. But again, try both. There's no right or wrong way, because without complete context of a personality type, and without complete context of a genetic makeup of a certain individual, and without complete context of how somebody responds to certain stimulus on parameters and lifting, even though 99 out of 100 people will build more muscle working for hypertrophy or working for hypertrophy in an 8 to 10 rep range, you're going to have some people with genetic makeup fibers that are going to be better signaling, or their body will respond to better signaling through higher or lower volume. So there isn't a one size fits all. There's a best practices, and there's a what works for 99% of people, but that you may not be in that 99 percentile. You may be in that 1% that responds better to ridiculously high volume or ridiculously low volume and builds lean muscle as a result. So experiment with both. The reality is, it's not which is better, it's which is better for you and your personality type and your schedule and what you enjoy the most. The one you enjoy the most is very likely going to be the one you stick with long term. If you love being around people and you love that CrossFit tribal community that's created, there's a good chance you're going to stick to that long term. If you love the isolation of the gym, where you've had a hard day at work or at home with the kids or whatever it is that's stressing you out in life, and you plug in your headphones, you listen to a podcast or you listen to music and you train and lift weights and that's your meditation, then a bodybuilding style program is probably going to work better for you. You can even build in some CrossFit at the end. I'll regularly do bodybuilding hypertrophy work at the start of my workout and then do some form of metabolic conditioning CrossFit style workout at the end, because they both work. They both can get your body to respond. They just work in different ways. So experiment with what works best for you and then double down on what works and cut what doesn't. Okay, next question. What advice would you give someone trying to quit alcohol? Both my parents and all my friends drink. So this actually came in on an Instagram DM, and I sent back this response, and this is off the back of this person actually having done nearly this entire challenge. So I wanted to share it on the podcast just because it gave him so much benefit, and it's something that I've kind of had issues with myself, particularly in my early 20s when I wasn't as confident with who I was and I'm still susceptible to lots of peer pressure. And even though we like to think in our early 20s, oh, fuck it, I'll do whatever I want. You know, I'm a grown man. You're not really, or I wasn't anyways. I was still cared what my friends thought. I cared what my family thought, and I was still very, very susceptible to peer pressure. So what I would advise for somebody that's trying to quit alcohol, and particularly it can be difficult if your parents or your friends all drink, is setting up a non-negotiable 30-day challenge where you tell them you're not drinking alcohol for the next 30 days. And this can work very, very well, because generally when you're trying to give up, say, alcohol, and we have this peer pressure, for those of you listening in Ireland, I know I've got people listening from all over the world, and maybe you have some Irish ancestry, but in Ireland, we've a pretty heavy drinking culture. And when you're not out drinking, and I remember even in my early 20s, if I was in a bar or a club, and if I wasn't drinking, people would look at you weird. And the only two things that you could say that you got away with was, I'm driving, or I've got championship in the morning. They were the only two excuses that you could give that you wouldn't be looked at sideways. The person that was like, oh no, I don't drink, was always looked like they had a secret or something to hide. And I get where that comes from, because there's nothing worse than being on a night out and having a sober person who reminds you of everything that you did the night before and then kind of makes fun of you in the morning. You're like, oh, for fuck's sake, they remember it all. And I get that. So there's that little bit of fear, social fear that comes with that. And that's probably where a lot of it comes from. When you're trying to give it up and you're not getting support from the people around you, you need to have an answer for them, because otherwise you're relying on willpower over a system to try and say no to something that you don't want to do. And it's very, very difficult, because then you're working off your system one over your system two. And Daniel Kahneman talks in his book, Thinking Fast and Slow, which is like an operational manual for your brain. It's incredible. And he speaks about your system one, your automatic, when you get left and factored in peer pressure and you're working off emotions to make a decision, versus your system two, which is way more rational, where you're able to step back and evaluate the whole situation. When you're on a night out, or you're in a friend's house, or you're at your parents' house where they're drinking, if you're relying on emotion, you're probably going to give in to willpower. Whereas if you have a system and you're relying on rationality, it's very likely that you're going to be able to stick to it. But you need to have that set up in advance. So what I would advise as your system over willpower on this is a 30-day non-negotiable giving up alcohol challenge. And I would literally tell every single person that offers you a drink, no, I'm giving it up for 30 days. I'm doing a challenge. I'm giving it up. And you make it a non-negotiable, because it's amazing what happens when you give up things like decision fatigue, which is where you're making decision after decision after decision all day and you get decision fatigue. It's one of the reasons that Mark Zuckerberg, who runs Facebook, and Bill Gates, who runs Microsoft, wear the same clothes every day. Steve Jobs was the same with his black t-shirts. They understood decision fatigue, that the more decisions we make throughout the day, we fatigue that quote-unquote fatigue muscle. And it makes it harder to say no to things later in the evening. It's one of the reasons why willpower gets diminished later on in the day. If you've been at work all day, you've been driving in traffic, and you've been trying not to beep your horn and go crazy, you've been trying not to tell your boss to fuck off because they're coming at you with deadlines, or you've had people or kids shouting in your ear all day, be either at home or at work, or you just had customers giving out to you. That diminishes your willpower throughout the day, and then later on, it means you're more susceptible to eating that tub of ice cream, or eating that bar of chocolate, or eating those biscuits, because you've depleted that throughout the day. You've actually depleted your decision fatigue, and you depleted your willpower. When you make something a non-negotiable, You cut that out. You don't make that decision anymore. One of the reasons that I literally set up my clothes, and I do this and I have done for about 2 years, is I set my clothes and gym bag beside my bed the night right before I go to bed. So I know exactly what I'm wearing in the morning. I'm not deciding and using decision-making skills first thing in the morning. I don't actually make any decision in the morning until about 2 hours into the day. Intentionally, I wake up in the morning, I put on my clothes, I'll go take my supplements, I'll have my green tea or a cup of coffee, I'll do my recovery strategy for my GEA program, I listen to a podcast and an audiobook, I'll write in my gratitude journal, and then I'll do my creative work for 2 hours. And then after that, I start making decisions on things. I'll turn on my laptop, I'll turn on my phone, I'll start replying to emails. That's when I start making decisions, because one of the reasons that I'm so big on morning routines and asking my guests about their morning routines is success leaves clues. And you see the people that are owning their morning or owning their day. And as a result of that, they generally are doing the same thing routinely every day. We don't decide our future. We decide our habits, and our habits decide our future. So when you have a routine, and the sign of routine in somebody that is doing well is normally a sign of success in most people. And a routine isn't necessarily a bad thing, particularly if it's supporting you and reducing the decision fatigue. And I've intentionally, after reading Steve Jobs' book, after reading about Bill Gates, after reading about Mark Zuckerberg, I was like, I need to build this into my life. And that's what happens when you have non-negotiables. You don't even look outside of it. And that's what you need to do when you're doing a 30-day no alcohol challenge, is literally set it as a non-negotiable. I have it as a non-negotiable in the morning that I don't make decisions for the first 2 hours of the day. From 5 a.m. to 7 a.m., I don't make decisions, because that will deplete throughout the day, and then I start making bad decisions later on in the day because I'm tired and depleted and my willpower has been drained from going into a reactive state from 5 a.m. until 5 p.m., and then you're on this negative feedback loop of anxiety and stress that can come with that. When you have a non-negotiable and you tell people that there's no way, either whether they give you your favorite drink or whatever it is, you're not drinking for 30 days. It's just a non-negotiable and it's closed off. Where we make mistakes, and again, I'm speaking from personal experience, where we make mistakes and where I've made my biggest mistakes in the past is when I haven't fully committed. I've been 99% in, but I haven't been all in. And I spoke in the mindset section of my book that the way I make decisions is that I'm either all in or I'm all out. I don't do it. It's binary. You can't be half pregnant. And one of the things that I do now is I make myself all in when I make a decision. I either go with it wholeheartedly or I don't do it at all. And I had a really bad habit, and I'll say it was a habit. It was more a characteristic flaw or a character flaw, but I'll say it was a habit because it's something that I suppose I'd cultivated over time, was I would always keep one leg out and one leg in on relationships, on business, on fitness programs I was on nutritional plans I was following. I would be doing it 99%, but it wasn't non-negotiable. It wasn't something that I felt strong enough to go pot committed with. And what that does is it leads to anxiety and stress, because then you have to make the decision. Is this a 1% opportunity? Is this where I'm going to break my diet? Is this where I'm going to not train today? Is this where I'm going to have that drink of alcohol? Because when you have that, that's decision fatigue. And that will make you break, because you've left that door open for the floodgates to open. Whereas if you cut it out or cut it off with 100% non-negotiable, that doesn't happen, because there's no two ways about it. You've gone pot committed. You've gone burnt the figurative boats, where you've gone to an island and you've burnt the boats, so you've got to make it work. Cortez did that when he landed on an island when he was trying to take over. I can't remember, my history is escaping me now, but that's where that burnt the boats thought process comes from, was when an army would come to an island and Cortez would burn the boats of his army so that they had to win the battle on the island because there was no going back. And that's what you need to do with non-negotiables. You need to burn the boats completely and not give yourself the option. And what I would do here is, once you have that built in place, it's a lot easier to deal with the social pressure that comes from it. Because what will happen, and I'm telling you, because the names change, but people are the same, because basic human psychology and misjudgments are the exact same across the majority of Homo sapiens. And what happens with people is they'll give you that social pressure initially, and they'll be like, oh, go on, have a drink. And they will bombard you with that social pressure for probably the first night or two. And then after that, they'll just stop. They'll do it. They'll ask you once, and you'll see the attempts getting weaker and weaker and weaker. And if we're using a percentage, you'll see that they're nearly at 90 or 100% trying to convince you the first night, and then that will drop to 80% the next night, and then it will drop to 40, and then it will drop to like 10 or 5%. You'll get out when you walk into a room, oh, will you have a drink? And you'll be like, no, I'm off it for 30 days. And they'll be like, oh, go on. And you'll be like, no. And then that will be it. And that's exactly what will happen. When I wanted to give up alcohol first, and this took me about 2 years, and it's not that I gave up alcohol, but I gave up weekly social drinking to the point of blacking out, which is what I did every weekend. And it, for me, was numbing out from pain, numbing out from reality, numbing out and, you know, self-medicating with alcohol. And I did this every weekend for years. And I remember when I first tried to give up, I wasn't in the most supportive group of friends, because they were big into the party scene and they were big into the drinking scene. And I struggled. And the only thing that got me over it was making this non-negotiable, where I told them, no, I'm not drinking for 30 days. I was training for an event. I can't remember what it was. It was Tough Mudder or Spartan. It was one of those runs, short distance obstacle course runs. And I said, no, I'm not drinking for 30 days because I'm training for this event. And that's what happened. I had 100% pressure the first night, about 80% the next night, and then it just kind of weaned and dropped off. And what happened after that was I just rinsed and repeated it. I had realized at that stage of my life, I was about 24 or 25, that this wasn't supporting me. Losing my weekend and numbing out from reality and completely obliterating myself every Friday and Saturday night, and being recovering on Sunday, being depressed on Monday, and not feeling right until Tuesday evening was becoming my reality. And what you do over time is where you'll lead your life in the future. And if I had fast forward on the clock of repeating that cycle over and over again, I wasn't going to be happy and I wasn't going to get anything done. And when I was able to break that trance or break that bad habit, a lot of other things started to open up. One, I started getting more days during the week because I wasn't losing 2 days from a hangover, and I wasn't losing the Sunday from depression and being depressed on the Monday and then not feeling right till Tuesday again. So I got a lot of my life back. I cognitively felt better. My physical fitness improved dramatically because I wasn't burning through so much alcohol. And doing that allowed me to step into a stronger version of me. It allowed me to become a better version. I'm not saying everybody listening here should give up going out every weekend or give up getting obliterated drunk on Saturday night. If that's what you love doing and you enjoy that and you enjoy the crack with your friends and that's what you like, then you do that. That's not the right question to ask. But if you're the person that wants to give up and can't because of social pressure, and you want to give up but can't because you feel you don't have a strong enough will to do so, then it's worth building those systems in place and seeing. What I would advise, and what I'll offer, and what I'll finish on, is set up a 30-day challenge. It's non-negotiable. Tell everybody that tries to put the social pressure on you for giving it up or quitting that you're doing it for 30 days. And then come back and reevaluate. In 30 days time, you may realize that, man, I really missed going out with my mates and having a few drinks. Then you go back and do it. At least now you've seen the other side. But it could happen that you do the 30 days and realize that, you know what, fuck it, I hated feeling that way. I really don't want to drink that much anymore. And you end up doing something similar to what I'm doing, where I will go out and I'll drink and I'll have a few drinks, and I do it regularly. But I don't go out every Friday and Saturday night and get obliterated drunk anymore. I don't numb out from my pain of reality and the demons that I'm dealing with by just numbing out through alcohol because it makes me disconnect from the world. Find what works for you. And as I said, it's context dependent. If you love going out with your friends and you have no problem and it's not affecting your life in a negative way, then keep doing it. This is for the people who are struggling with the peer pressure, who want a tool that they can potentially try that will allow them to quit alcohol. And I'm giving you a first-hand experience as someone that did it at the age of 24, that's what's going to happen. You will find once you go non-negotiable, you have that initial peer pressure, and then it will fade and fade and fade. But also be aware that there's a chance you'll end up disconnecting from that those friends, and you'll realize that some of those friends were drinking buddies and not friends. And that's a harder reality to deal with. When you realize that some of your friends who you thought were super close weren't really friends, they were drinking buddies. And that's harder to deal with. So I would mentally prepare yourself for that, because that was probably struck me more, that I wasn't getting texts from people and I wasn't having people message me anymore because I wasn't going out every weekend. And then you realize then you didn't really have any friends. You didn't have people you could turn to, or those particular people weren't people you could turn to. They weren't people you could trust. They were just people that you went out with. And just psychologically prepare yourself for that, because that was a bit of a hit for me, because there's a big difference between having quality and quantity friends. I had a group of 10 people that I would go out with every weekend. But then when you stop drinking and the texts stop coming, you start wondering, were they really your friends? And that can be hard to deal with psychologically. So just prepare for that. But as I've said on the podcast in the past, I would rather have 4 quarters than 100 pennies. You're better to have 1, 2, 3, and 4, if you're really lucky, super close friends who have your back and you have theirs, who make you become a better version of you and champion what you do and you champion what they do, than having 10, 20, 50, or 100 friends who are all surface level, who are all just there because you're acquaintances, you're not really friends. That's just a reframe of the way you see it. Change the way you look at things, and the things you look at change. You're better to have 1, 2, 3, and as I said, 4 people, if you're super lucky, that you can trust with your life and theirs with you, than having a load of drinking buddies who you can't turn to if anything actually did go wrong. So that advice would have helped me at 24, 25, because I didn't understand that at the time. I didn't understand that it was about cultivating friendships with the 4 people and your 5 people who are in your inner circle, or virtual or physical inner circle, and cultivating the relationships with those people. I didn't know that in my mid-20s, and I'll just end this question on that, because that advice would have helped me deal with the psychological turmoil and my own insecurities of why aren't my friends texting me anymore, that I had to go through. And when you reframe it in a way that it's quality over quantity, and that you're better to cultivate those friendships with the few than with the many who are drinking buddies or party people who you go out with regularly, you will be better as a result. As someone that has came out the other side of that and has experienced it firsthand, I promise you, this is better. When you come out the other side and you've got your 3 or 4 people who you would do anything for and them for you, that is better. And I've lived it both ways, and I'm telling you firsthand experience, it's better this way. So hopefully that helps, and good luck with your 30-day non-negotiable alcohol giving up challenge. Okay, next question. Hey Brian, just looking for a bit of advice. So I'm at a point in my life where I've lost all job satisfaction and really need a change. I know you've worked to get where you are today, but you had a goal. Problem is, I've never had a career goal. I hear people say, find what you want to do for the rest of your life and work towards it, but I haven't a notion. I really want to find my why. Is there any book you recommend or would recommend? Should I see a guidance counselor? So, okay, couple of on this one, because I need to flesh this out. Books, there are books that will help you, but the reality is sometimes, and I'm speaking as someone that has a section called Finding Your Why in my book, The Fitness Mindset, and I'm speaking as an author and a best-selling author of a book that helps with mindset, that sometimes books are not the answer, because books can be a band-aid on a wound that's bleeding much more than a band-aid can particularly or can actually fix. And what books can become is they can become an excuse to not do the real work or ask the real questions that help move you forward. I'm a massive fan of reading, and I'm a massive fan of books and podcasts to bridge the gap between the things you don't know and the things you don't know you don't know. And they can work as an incredible tool for moving your life forward if you apply the rules and principles from them. Knowing and not knowing is the same as not knowing. Knowing and not doing is the same as not knowing. And what happens with a lot of people is they have this problem where they can't find job satisfaction, or they can't figure out this issue with their relationship, or they can't figure out how to get self-aware enough to understand their own psychology on why they self-sabotage. When you read books and you find a piece of gold or a piece of nugget of gold that could potentially support you, and you don't apply that in your life, that's the same as not knowing it at all. And I see it countless times where people are like, I know what I should do, but I just don't do it. I'm like, well, knowing and not doing is the same as not knowing. So you have to apply the rules and principles you find and not use a book as a band-aid. Because what can happen when you buy a book or listen to a podcast, but particularly buying a book, when you buy something physical or download it, that you've paid for something physical, you get this dopamine hit and you think that, oh, well, this will fix my problem now. And that can sometimes fill the gap of fixing the problem in your own mind. You think, well, I've downloaded the book or I bought the book, that's it, I'll be fine now. That's not the truth. The truth is you have to read the book, find the message, apply the principle, and then apply it in your own life. And that's fucking hard. That's difficult as fuck. It's why people don't do it. And again, I'm speaking as from myself. There's been so many times when I've read a book about something to do with self-sabotage or something to do with relationships or something to do with some bad habits that I created in my own life. And I'm like, oh yeah, shit, I should really do that. And then I close the book and don't apply it. And I come back to it 6 months later and realize, oh my God, I had an amazing message right there and I didn't do anything with it. That's what happens. So going, reading a load of books on how to find out what you should do or what you should do with your life can help, and it can bridge that gap. And as I spoke in the mindset section of my book, and there's a whole section there about finding your why, the thing that drives you. But I also spoke about bridging the gap between the things you know you don't know and the things you don't know you don't know. The things you don't know, you can find out. You can read books, you can go to seminars, you can listen to podcasts. The things that really kill you are the things you don't know, because if you don't know there's a problem, there's nothing you can do about it. And one of the things I'll regularly say to people coming through my mentorship programs or on my business programs is, I have no problem or I have no issue with any problem that your business have or that your life has. A lack of identification of the problem is a problem. And that's where books can bridge the gap. They can make you see something or point out something that you didn't see in your conscious thought. And then once you apply the steps or the principles or the strategies that can help you fix whatever problem that is, in this case, finding out what it is you should do with your life, that can, once you marry that with action, you can actually get a lot done and it can work tremendously well. Going to a guidance counselor is the exact same thing. It's just another level up from a book. It's the same as going to a seminar where you pay money and go to a seminar. But if you don't do the work, none of it really matters. So you got to figure out what's causing that block. And I'm going to share actual practical advice on what I did and what advice I'd offer that you could potentially do if you have no job satisfaction and you really need a change. But I need to foundation or lay a foundation pillar with that even if you know what to do and you don't do it, it doesn't matter. It doesn't fucking matter at all, because knowing and not doing is the same as not knowing. So I want to kind of preface with that, just because if that has landed or resonated, and you've ever, and you probably have, because I've done it, and nearly everybody I think I've ever spoke to on the planet has done it, where we've heard a piece of information, or we've read a piece of information, or we've seen something that would have supported us and go, yeah, that's really good. That's really good advice. I should totally do that. And then we don't fucking do it. And I've done it all the time, and I'm working continuously, nearly daily, to try and not let that cognitive psychological misjudgment kick in when I get a good piece of advice, or I read a good piece of advice, or I get something that could potentially support my life, and then I don't apply it. And that's a sentence that I continuously play in my mind. Knowing and not doing is the same as not knowing. And I will let that circulate in my mind when I find a piece of information that I think will support me instantly, or will support me right now, or will change my vantage point or perspective on the way I'm seeing things right now. So what I would advise and what I would offer, so if you're at a point in your life where you've lost all job satisfaction and you really need a change, and you say that you know that I've worked to get to where I am, but I had a goal, Make sure you're not telling yourself a story that other people can do things and you can't. And before I get on to that practical advice on what I actually did and what I would advise you do, even though you've never had a career goal, is not get wrapped up in that story of putting other people either on pedestals or putting other people on different points that, well, they can do it and I can't do it. Because if somebody else has done it, they're living proof that you can do it. And you're either self-sabotaging yourself by a story you're telling yourself, or you're getting really bad advice or opinions from people around you. And you need to not let that dictate the direction you take your life. And you need to differentiate between the signal and the noise. Because the noise of the outside world and what everybody's telling you should do, or the bombardment from media that you get, you need to be able to distinguish the signal from the noise. And the signal is your internal compass. It's where is your internal compass pointing? What is it telling you you should do? And make sure you get out of your fucking head if you're telling yourself a story that I can't do that, or I'm not good enough, or I could never do that. And these are all stories we've all told ourselves at one point or time. And you can tell from the animation in my voice, it's one that has regularly came up for me, where I would, my automatic thought process go to was, I can't do that. That's for somebody else to do. There's no way I could do that. There's no way I could be a competitive bodybuilder. There's no way I could be a professional fitness model. There's no way I could have my own business. There's no way I could run through the desert into the Sahara. All these fucking stories I once told myself, these were all legitimate thoughts that went through my head. And Buddha said, don't let your own biggest enemy live between your two ears. And for fucking years, my own biggest enemy lived between my two ears, because I would tell myself a story that I wasn't good enough, or I wasn't worthy, or who would listen to me, or why would I do that? That I have nothing to offer the world in that way. These are fucking stories. They're opinions of yourself that you're holding true as beliefs. They're not beliefs. They're not reality. They're just opinions and thoughts that you have. You don't need to believe everything you think. So you need to get out of your head and not having your own worst enemy live between your head and comparing yourself to other people and what they do. Your journey isn't their journey. Your page one is going to be different from their page 20. So stop comparing yourself first and foremost to everybody else around you who's doing what they want to do. That doesn't help you get to where you want unless they're providing you valuable information or being a living example of what you want to achieve. Otherwise, that comparison is the thief of joy, and it's going to make you fucking feel worse about what you're doing because you think that, well, I should be doing that because everybody else seems to be happy with what they're doing. Stop comparing yourself with other people. Stop telling yourself the story that other people had goals and I have never had a goal. That's a fucking story, because you can set a goal and you can work towards it. So stop creating self-limiting talk and self-talk that's going to completely deteriorate any potential chance you have of actually moving into the direction or having a career goal or having a life goal that you want. So with that, there's a couple of things you can ask yourself that I think will potentially support you. And the problem is that you've never had a career goal. That's not a problem. A lack of identification of a problem is a problem. Not setting a career goal is as simple as setting a career goal. It's setting a goal of what you want to be, or who you want to be, or where you want to rise to in your area that you're working in, or in your area of expertise. It is that simple. What does it look like? You need to be able to see that vision and hold that vision in your hand. If you can see it in your mind, you can hold it in your hand. You need to be able to see how far on that ladder you want to climb, and is your ladder up against the right wall? Because if you're at the bottom of the ladder against the right wall, you can start climbing and you will get to where you want to get to. If you're at the top or in the middle of the ladder against the wrong wall, you can keep fucking climbing and you're just going to get to the wrong place faster. So what I would offer first is ask yourself, is your ladder against the right wall? Is what you're doing right now, if you got to the top of that ladder, would you be happy? With that, while you're climbing that ladder, would you be happy? Because if you can answer yes to both of those questions, you're climbing the right wall. Buddha said, if you can't be happy on the journey, how are you going to be happy at the destination? And that's what we can do with our ladder. And this goes for business, this goes for relationships, this goes for fitness, this goes for everything. If you're not enjoying what you're doing daily, the journey, the process, and you're reaching for a carrot at the top of the ladder, it's very, very unlikely that you're going to enjoy that carrot when you get there. you're very, very unlikely going to enjoy that destination when you get there, because you didn't enjoy that journey and you didn't enjoy that process and you didn't become the person you needed to be to get to the top of that ladder. When you're climbing the ladder against the right wall and your internal compass is pointing in that direction with the person that you're going out with or married to right now, with the job that you're doing right now, with the business training or fitness or nutritional program you're following right now, you need to line up your internal compass and then start climbing that right ladder. And you do that by asking, is my ladder against the right wall? Because if the answer is no, there's nothing else I can say beyond this point that's going to help you. You need to get back and reevaluate the things that you want to do and what you want your life to be and get out of your head for the stories you've told yourself and the self-limitations, because they're all self-created. Every limitation you've ever given yourself, you can tell yourself that it was your story. You can tell yourself it was the way you were brought up. They're all limitations you've created yourself. None of them are real. None of them. They're all made up. You've made them up. And when you start to own that, you can control it. And when you control it, you can change it. And questioning any self-limiting belief you have can allow you to take a wider perspective of the view of how you're living your life and see it from the outside and see the forest amongst the trees and realize that my ladder is or isn't against the right wall. If you're in a career and you vision yourself climbing to the top of that ladder and you're happy and you love doing it every single day, then your ladder is against the right wall. You keep going up that career path, and it may not be your own business. It may not be in fitness. You may be a teacher. You may be a lawyer. You may be running your own company. You may be the CEO of a multi-million dollar Fortune 500. You may be doing something that is completely different from what I'm doing or from what the majority of people around you are doing. It doesn't matter. It's completely relative. If you love doing what you're doing and you'd be happy at the top of the ladder, keep climbing. If not, you need to reevaluate it. And by all means, it isn't as simple as quitting. People have bills to pay. People have families and kids to support. But what I would advise is if you're climbing that ladder and you're not happy with the wall it's against, in your spare time, as your side hustle, the thing that you do when you have any free time, and you can create that free time because being busy and prioritizing, being busy and being productive is not the same thing. And you can run out of energy, but you don't run out of time. When you start to reframe these thought processes, in your spare time, start getting your ladder against the right wall and start doing the thing that you love. When I was working as a teacher, and I was 4 years as a full-time primary school teacher, I liked my job, but I didn't love it. But for 2 years, I worked as a personal trainer in the evening because I loved fitness and it's what I wanted to do full time. I did it for 2 years. For 2 years, I worked both. I worked daytime as a teacher and evening time as a personal trainer. And I didn't have much of a social life. That was from the age of 24 to probably 25, 23 to 25. And I spoke about it earlier about when I was giving up alcohol, that it gave me more energy and it was allowed me to do this, and I wasn't numbing out from reality because I was starting to get my ladder against the right wall and I felt that my internal compass was pointing in that direction. And all of a sudden, when I started to climb that ladder, I didn't feel the need to numb out every weekend. And what happened for me was that side hustle gave me energy because I knew the ladder was against the right wall. I was like, my compass is pointing in this direction. This is where I need to go. So first ask yourself, do you need to do something similar? What do you do that you love? What would you love to do? What are you good at? If you're able to support and provide value to people in that, you will make a living doing it. Even if you're not good at it and you don't charge people, I guarantee you the happiness that will come from that side hustle and that side project will fulfill you in all areas of your life. If you love playing music or singing or poetry, writing poetry or creating art, but you're crap, but you love it, I guarantee you, you'll feel fulfilled doing it. People may not pay you for it, but you'll enjoy doing it and you'll feel more fulfilled in your life. And then ask yourself, who can you help? Because a lot of happiness and fulfillment in life can come when we get lost in the service of others. And when you start to serve more people and help more people becoming a better version of them, and whatever that looks like for you, because it's completely relative. If you've gone to the gym for the first time, you can still help the person that's on the couch. It's completely relative. There's somebody that would trade your life for theirs because you know something they don't, or you have information that they don't, or you have a life that they don't. You can help and serve and provide that to people. And that's the greatest currency of all. And as somebody that has been unbelievably fortunate with monetary finances, different investments and portfolios that I have, those numbers don't provide fulfillment, because you can add another zero or two zeros or three zeros to the end of your bank account. But when you put your happiness and fulfillment into numbers, you'll never be happy because numbers never end. And my fulfillment took an unbelievable trajectory in the opposite direction when I started to lose myself in the service of others, because it's the greatest currency of all. And when you do that, and you help and make the world better because you were here, and you wake up every morning loving what you do because you know that you're making the lives of the people around you better because you're here, and you're trying to live as an example for them, or you're trying to provide value and serve them in some way, that's going to give you fulfillment. And whether you do that you're fortunate enough to do it in your career, that your career overlaps with that, that your fulfillment and your monetary income overlap, then you're one of the most fortunate percentage of people in the world. Even if you don't do that and your career is completely separate and you're getting your fulfillment from elsewhere, I guarantee you, you'll see it showing up, because how you do everything is how you do anything, or how you do anything is how you do everything. So ask yourself those questions. Get out of your head. Stop letting your own enemy live between your two ears. Stop creating those self-limiting stories that are holding you back, because that's all they are. They're stories you've told yourself. And get your ladder against the right wall in some capacity. Whether you stay in your normal career, you may find that you just do a normal 9-to-5, when you go and do an office job and your passion is outside of that. By all means, if that's what's making you happy, then that's what you do. If you get paid for your passion, even better. But not everybody will. And not everybody needs to. Because you may not find that when you have to earn an income off something you love to do, it can take away that love, because there's now pressure around that thing that you love to do. So you may not actually end up changing careers at all. You may end up doing what you're doing and doing your side hustle. I can't answer that for you. I don't know what's right for you, and anybody else that's listening, nobody can give you that advice, because you know what direction your internal compass is pointing. So you got to get real with that and start distinguishing the noise from the signal. And when you do that, I guarantee you, whatever decision you make, you're going to feel so much better, and you won't be using books or guidance counselors or seminars as a mask and a band-aid and a excuse to not do the work. Because when you know something and you don't apply it, you may as well not know it, because it's a waste of information in your head, and it's a waste of knowledge in your head, because you're not doing anything with it. So with that, hopefully that provides you value. And anybody else in a similar situation that is wondering about making a life change or career goal or relationship or fitness change, because how you do anything is how you do everything. So hopefully you got a lot of value from that, and best of luck with it. So that's a wrap for today's episode. Massive thank you for listening. As I said at the top of the podcast, go check out my audiobook, the audio version of The Fitness Mindset, on audible.co.uk, audible.com, and all the other audiobook platforms. So go check that out. Hopefully you get a lot of value from that. Hope you enjoyed this week's episode. If you did, last thing I'll ask, and I love you forever, please leave a review on iTunes or tag me in your Instagram stories if you're listening to the podcast, and let me know what you thought. If you do that, I will love you forever. Thank you so much for listening. Catch you all next week. Quick message before you head off. Just letting you know, my best-selling book, The Fitness Mindset, is now available on Audible and all major audiobook apps. If you're like me and love listening to books while you travel or work out, be sure to go to audible.co.uk or audible.com to check out the audio version of The Fitness Mindset. You can listen to a 3-minute sample on there, or you can download the full book. Also, last thing before you leave, if you try Clean Cut Meals, the sponsors of today's episode, be sure to enter the code BKF at the checkout to get your 20% off your first order. Clean Cut Meals are doing all my food for my next adventure challenge coming early next year. I'll be announcing more about that during next month's podcast, and I'm just waiting on medical clearance. Yikes. So stay tuned for that. And remember, code BKF at the checkout for 20% off your first order. Catch you all next week.